The Body Love Binge is the podcast for you if you're so done with living in the hellhole of an eating disorder, hating your body and constantly wishing you were thinner. If you're truly ready to heal from anorexia, bulimia or binge eating disorder and genuinely make friends with your body, then you're in the right place. I'm your host, Victoria Kleinsman, a food freedom and body love coach, eating disorder and abuse survivor, who's on an absolute mission to love and support millions of women to come back home to self-love and intuition eating. If it's possible for me, I know it's possible for you as well. Thank you so much for being here. I'll see you in the episode. Hi, queens. How are you doing today? Do you like my new nails, by the way? You can't really tell. They're kind of like metallic-y. Can you tell on the video? Obviously, you can't tell on the podcast. Sorry about that. And on the video as well, you can see I've lit a candle for you all. It will probably go a bit dark because I have a lot to say today. And if it does and I need to put the light on, then I'll just edit that bit out. But enjoy the candle in the background next to those beautiful wooden praying hands that one of my incredible clients and now very special friend has brought me. Today, as I'm sure you already know, I always say this because you've clicked on something to listen or watch this, I'm answering listeners' questions and I got so many awesome questions. I'm going to answer them in the order that I received them. So question, let's dive straight in. Question number one from, question number one from Sarah H from Instagram. Hi, Sarah. Why do I look forward to eating muesli in the evening, even though I don't particularly like it and it gives me a bad stomach? I'm actually sitting here looking forward to it. And then an explosion mind emoji. I feel like I've got a hero hair on my face. I'm sorry for the podcast again, but I'm like faffing around with my face and I think I've got a dog hair. My dog is called Hero on my face. Anyway, Sarah, great question. Thank you for asking it. And I'm going to land you with a quote, a truth bomb to start this answer off with. And that truth bomb is, and of course I'm reading to what I've written here, that is because you want what you need. And so part of you needs the muesli. So I would like you to get curious with this. What part of you needs the muesli and why? You are a human, and so there is never anything that you do without a reason for doing it. And that reason is always going to be and is emotional. There's an emotional reason as to why for everything that we do. Even if I adjust the way I'm sitting, the reason why I perhaps adjust myself is because I am uncomfortable in that position. And so it feels better if I change my position. And this is physical and emotional feeling, physical feeling and emotional feeling. But there's a reason why we do everything and it's always emotional. What feeling are you seeking when you eat the muesli? I can already see that part of the reason is because you're looking forward to it. Notice those the words that you've used. You're looking forward to it. And it feels good to look forward to something, right? So my question is, Sarah, why are you looking forward to it? I will also add in the part of you that was denied muesli for however many number of years or months, most likely years. I know you actually, years. The part of you that was denied muesli for years needs to feel safe that there is enough and that you're not going to restrict it again. It needs the taste. It needs the carbs. It needs the experience of eating it. And that is okay. With my hierarchy of needs, so not Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but Victoria's new and advised, it's not a word, you know what I mean? Victoria's hierarchy of needs, you should have just left it there, shouldn't you, Victoria? In terms of eating, regarding food, the body, the very base of the hierarchy of the triangle, the body doesn't care about sickness until it's getting enough food. So at the base of the triangle of the hierarchy of food needs is getting enough food. When and only when is the body getting enough food it will then be able to relax and get out of fight or flight, because being starved and being undernourished is actually very traumatic for the body, and it puts it into a chronic state of stress, a chronic state of fight or flight. So when the body is getting enough food, it will then be able to relax, and only then can you start to pay attention to your body's communication of what feels good and what doesn't feel good. When you've reached that stage, you'll be able to then make a choice that won't feel forced, it won't feel restrictive, it will feel easy and natural. You'll then be able to make a choice on what to eat, especially if something doesn't make you feel very well. One last thing that I would like to add is stress is also an indicator of a bad stomach. Is that the right way around? Stress is an indicator of a bad stomach. Stress causes stomach issues. Stress causes a lot of issues, actually. And so if you're stressed in any way about eating the muesli, which I'm assuming you are because you've asked this question, then that will contribute to the tummy upset. So what is the antidote to this then? Okay, number one, relax. Number two, get curious, journal the questions that I've asked you. Number three, keep allowing, always keep allowing. Number four, connect to your body's wisdom. And number five, notice what happens and get curious and let me know. Great question. Thank you for asking. Okay, question two from Claire H. How do I know how much to eat when I still don't have a strong physical hunger? I'm going to give more context to Claire's question. She says, I'm still struggling to know how much to eat when I don't have a strong physical hunger. I think 30 years of restricting has meant my body can't be asked telling me anymore. I love how I attract people who'd speak like me. At least it doesn't trust me enough yet. So while I am eating and I get full, I still eat a large amount of vegetables and salad. I don't think I'm eating enough energy to really get my metabolism going and fully recover, but have minimal hunger. I don't want to count calories again and trying to stop looking at food that way. Good. But fear the ED is still winning in my overall day of eating. All right, there's a lot here to unpack, Claire. So let's get to it. What you said about your body not being asked to tell you it's hungry anymore can actually be so true for a lot of people, because hunger signals use energy to create and then to send in the body. And so if you're, I've got a leaf on my head. Hi. And so if your body hasn't got enough energy for more vital bodily functions, such as keeping your heart beating, breathing, repairing internal cells, digesting, etc., then it won't waste energy on sending hunger signals, especially if these signals were ignored previously for a long period of time. The body is very smart. The body is very adaptable. It's not going to waste its time constantly giving something that doesn't ever get acted on. It can take a while for your body to trust you. You've mentioned these words, you're very right. It can take a while for your body to trust you again after being restricted for so long. And so what is the best way to build up trust with someone or something? I'll leave you to think about that. Also, hunger doesn't only mean a tummy rumble or a growling stomach, by the way. Hunger can be experienced differently from person to person. I know that I'm hungry when, if I think about food, it feels good to me. My mouth might start to water, or I'll just notice internally like a peak of interest or a feeling of energy if I'm thinking about food. If I'm not hungry, I'll have more of a neutral reaction if I'm thinking about food. But here's the funny thing. I don't really think about food unless I'm hungry, unless someone's physically bringing something to me, or maybe I'm walking past a bakery and I can smell it. So even in that regard, if I'm not hungry, then and I think about food or I see food, I'll have more of a neutral reaction. So yes, if something magically appeared in front of me, and someone offered me something, then I might eat it, which is also fine. It's just food. It's no biggie. My body knows what to do with it. But I know that I'm not necessarily hungry. I also experience hunger with low energy, a bit of a foggy head, and annoyance. So, you know, there's that hashtag hangry for a reason. I get a bit annoyed and just a bit low on energy. So in the stage that you are currently at, if you are at all thinking about food in any way, eat. No exceptions. So hunger can feel differently to everybody. So you said you feel full, so you do have a connection. There's also something that's just come up that I haven't written down that I want to speak to. You may be so used to feeling chronically hungry that anything that, so even neutrality for you, not being hungry and not being full, might feel like you're really full because you have something inside of your stomach and you're not used to feeling that way. So even when a quote normal person will have a meal and feel full and satisfied, then if you were to feel the same way, it would feel like an extreme over fullness. It will feel horrible emotionally and physically. So you need to train yourself slowly to having food in your stomach and to train yourself out of being chronically hungry all the time. So that's something else I wanted to add in. Also, I want to ask you, why are you eating a large amount of vegetables and salad? You've also mostly answered that for me in what you wrote towards the end of the question. I fear the ED is still winning in my overall day of eating. If you are still being held prisoner by the eating disorder, then break free by doing the exact opposite of what it wants you to do. Support is necessary with this. As you can imagine, a lot of shit is going to come up when you start to do this. But on the other side of fear lies freedom. Your brain is currently wired with an eating disorder, but you don't have an eating disorder. Your brain does. So you, the being in there that has a brain, gets to reprogram your brain so that it doesn't have an eating disorder anymore. And you do that, of course, by rewiring your fear of weight gain, doing the opposite of what the eating disorder is telling you to do, healing trauma at your root as to why you had the eating disorder in the whole first place. There are many layers to this, but it's quite, the rewiring part is very simple. It just needs repetition. It needs understanding, repetition, and consistency. The trauma stuff is also quite simple. Even when trauma seems really complex, there's some very standardized things that are, what am I saying here? People that have trauma, no matter how complex, they always go to the same kind of, I don't know what I'm saying right now. I do, but it's not coming out. When you've experienced trauma, you become codependent with a person or things or process addictions and all of that. What I'm saying is, no matter how much trauma is underneath as the reason for the codependency and the shame is underneath the codependency, it leads to the same thing. So the recovery of that and the healing of that is the same. That's what I'm trying to say. So no matter how complex the trauma, abuse is abuse, trauma is trauma, enmeshment is enmeshment, abandonment is abandonment, shame is shame. You see what I'm trying to say? So there's a lot of work to do around that. But again, it's quite simple. You just need someone who knows what they're doing. And by the way, I do know what I'm doing, even though I couldn't speak and get out what I wanted to say just a minute ago. And lastly, Claire, if the migration response to your anorexia is still switched on currently, genetically for you, then your body won't send you hunger signals. Instead, it will encourage you to eat less. It will encourage you to move more. And you turn the migration response off by mechanical eating and gaining weight so that your body thinks you've arrived at the land of abundance and you are no longer in scarcity and starvation. And again, that takes support because, oh my God, I remember it so well. There was nothing worse for me. I would rather have someone pull the gun to my head than someone make me eat something. Now you get to choose whether you want to or not. And the fact that you're here is the fact you want to recover. So think about the migration response as well. When that's switched off, it gets so much easier. So let me know if that helped. And I am going to answer your second question, Claire, as well. And that is how to stop being so consumed with what others are eating. And I'm going to give context to what she said as well. I'm also keen to hear more about stopping being so consumed with what others are eating. I obsess over making sure everyone else is fed and only really feel allowed to eat myself when others have. It is crazy. I hate worrying so much. Do you think this will go away when I'm recovered? Is it me deflecting my own issues onto others? Drives me nuts and impacts my whole day. I'm always preparing food for others and I'm worried if I don't, then they won't eat. Okay, so the reason I've chosen to answer the second question, Claire, is because it's quite a straightforward answer, really. The reason why you are so consumed with what others are eating is because you are currently living with a restrictive eating disorder. We become obsessed with what we don't have, but what we want. Your body wants and needs more food. Feeling allowed to eat only when others have eaten is mostly an eating disorder issue and will completely go away when you're recovered. And it can be linked to this partially self-worth issue, that not necessarily about the eating only when others have eaten, but for some reason, my intuition brought that up. There's a potentially a self-worth issue here, meaning that you can't go first, but it's mostly 99% eating disorder. It's because you think eating is wrong. And so if others do it, then it gives you, quote, permission to eat as well. Not that you actually need permission, of course. You were born with the permission to eat simply because you're alive. Eating is not wrong. Eating is not bad. Then we come to the question of, why don't you want to nourish your body? Why don't you want to take care of yourself? Again, links to trauma. Are you really worried about your family not eating if you don't prepare the food? Because I know that this part isn't about them, it's about you. So think about that. Are you really worried that they won't eat if you don't prepare food? What is this really about? Because it's not about them. Okay, I have a question from the lovely Dawn. Top tips to live in alignment with your values. Okay, and then she says, unless you're planning on using the fig roll question. Now, let's get one thing straight. Dawn, I think she sent it me as a story on Instagram. The question, those of you that who are not from England will not have the foggiest clue what I'm talking about, probably. But she put a question on Instagram. Is a fig roll a biscuit or a cake? I say, and Google fig roll if you have no idea what I'm talking about. I say a fig roll is a fig roll. If you prefer to see a fig roll as a biscuit, then go ahead. If you want to call it a cake, then go ahead and call it a cake. Okay, back to the question, top tips to live in alignment with your values. Number one, get clear on what your values are. Number two, do those current values support who you want to be and the goals that you have? If your values do not support who you want to be and the goals that you have, you get to change your values. Number three, how would living in alignment with these values make you feel? Number four, what does it look like to live out your values day to day in thought, in feeling, and in behaviors? Number five, what is blocking you, or what could possibly come up to block you from following through with the answer to the above? And the above question was, what does it look like to live in alignment with your values? Number six, work through any blocks by visiting where the fears, limiting beliefs and stories came from, meeting yourself with compassion, finding evidence to prove them wrong, and then taking action anyway, #growth. Number seven, enjoy the fulfillment you'll feel when you are living in alignment with your values. All right, I have a question from Michelle. How do I help a loved one whose anorexia has morphed into bulimia through the recovery process? I first of all want to give you a big hug, Michelle, because I don't know who this loved one is. You've not mentioned if you live with them or not, but the fact that you've asked this is they're very dear to you, and it's so hard living with someone or loving someone who is struggling with an eating disorder. So big hugs, first and foremost, okay? Secondly, this is what literally happened to me. Again, you didn't mention if this person was also binging before the purging. So you said that the anorexia recovery is morphed into bulimia. I'm going to assume that this person is binging and then purging, but this isn't always the case. There's anorexia with purge tendencies without the binging. There's both, and there's a different type, but it's all the same thing. It's the restriction. The anorexia is trying to find a way to compensate for the food that has been eaten. Every eating disorder is a restricted eating disorder. So if anyone has a history of restricting, any binging and bulimia is born from the restriction. The only exception to this is actual binge eating disorder, not binge eating in response to previous, current, or impending restriction, which has a genetic and biological component to it and shows itself very early in childhood. There is a genetic malfunction in the way the body responds to leptin. So let me, before I read out what leptin is, let me just go back to what I've said. The only exception to this, in terms of every eating disorder is a restrictive eating disorder, the only exception is actual real binge eating disorder. Again, not binge eating because of previous restriction, not binge eating because of current restriction or impending restriction, because you think you're going to go on a diet, you think you're going to go on a restriction again. That's binge eating. Binge eating disorder has a genetic and biological component to it and shows itself very early in childhood, very early on. There is a genetic malfunction in the way which the body responds to leptin. And leptin is a protein hormone predominantly made by adipose, which is fat, so adipose cells, and its primary role is to regulate long-term energy balance. As one of the major signals of energy status, leptin levels influence appetite, satiety, and motivated behaviors oriented towards the maintenance of energy reserves, aka eating. Okay, so that's just, I'm going to leave that there. If anyone would like more information about that, let me know and I will do extra research and do an episode about it. And this has only come into my awareness in the past year and a half. I thought I had binge eating disorder, but the new science shows that binge eating is a response to restriction. So any eating disorder is a restrictive eating disorder, apart from binge eating disorder, which again is a genetic, biological thing. It starts very early on in childhood and there is no restriction present. Okay. So Michelle, going back to your question, how to support a loved one, this can be such a hard pill to swallow, but all you can do to best support your loved one is to let them know that you are here for them. And also to show them that too. It can be so heartbreaking to see a person suffer and struggle with an eating disorder if the person doesn't want to recover, and you're literally watching them become half the person they were in so many ways. You can see the pain they're in and there's nothing you can do about it to help them unless they want to recover. So the only exception for this is if this person is a child and you have the authority, I don't know if it's the right word to use, but as a parent, you have the authority to enroll them into a recovery clinic or a recovery center. There's so many problematics to that though as well, but there's a reason why I've included it. So if you have the authority or the influence more so to put the child into recovery center, even then the child still needs to want to recover. However, the weight gain that will happen in this recovery treatment can help them get out of the migration response. So when that genetic migration response is switched off, don't forget, when the migration response for anorexia is switched on, all you want to do is eat less and move more. When the migration response is switched off, your body stops sending you signals to eat less and move more. You do have the neuropathways wired to have an eating disorder. That's where the second biggest component of healing and recovery comes from. But biologically, at least, is easier to eat. So if they go into recovery and the migration response is turned off because they've gained weight, that can be hugely beneficial to recovery. But it is also essential that the child is getting emotional support and seeing an exceptionally good therapist who specializes in eating disorders, who have actually, in my opinion, has been through an eating disorder. Otherwise, if the root cause isn't healed, the eating disorder will manifest again when they come back out of the treatment center, if the neurowiring hasn't been changed and the trauma healed, okay? So how to help, Michelle? Ask the loved one what you can do to support them in your recovery and watch this video and this video. Obviously, this is linked to my linked in my blog. I probably could do a fancy thing on YouTube where I point up and then magically something comes on for you to click on. If I can't work that out, I'll just pop it below. And these videos are of my previous client who is chatting to her husband about how her recovery journey has been and his part in it and how he did support her, how he could have better supported her, how someone who is supporting someone with an eating disorder can better help them. So those two videos are really, really worth watching. If they don't want to recover, so if Michelle, this loved one, doesn't want to recover, this is what you can do. Number one, love them unconditionally. Number two, don't give up on them or don't label them as bulimic or anorexic. Number three, treat them like they don't have an eating disorder. As the more you see them as that identity, the more they will identify with it. So for example, don't stop asking them if they would like dinner or if they would like to go out for lunch. This may be frustrating for you and this may get this person angry, but when they want to recover, they'll one day say yes. And they'll be so grateful that the offer is still there, that you're still treating them like a normal human being and that you've been asking all along. Number four, be the example of someone who eats freely and who accepts their body and loves themselves. This is crucial. No diet talk, no weight loss talk, no body negativity talk of any kind. And be the embodiment of what you would like this person to have in their own lives. Number five, make it easy for them to eat and difficult for them to restrict or purge. Always have food available, show safety around food and eating. If they purge via vomiting, make it challenging for them to use the bathroom after eating, etc. Yes, this is going to piss the person off, but it's not pissing the person off, it's pissing the eating disorder brain off. So that can be a way to support them and hopefully get them to see that this eating disorder is just not worth it. Number six, believe in their recovery and the likelihood that one day they will be free. Talk to that. Allow them to buy into your vision. So this might look like, I don't know who this person is to you, but this might look like, say if it's your partner. Also, when you're recovered and we go to Italy, like we can have these freshly made Italian pizzas and how exciting will that be? And speak to that. Again, it's a lot for you to take on as well. And this is why number seven is get support yourself. This is so important, Michelle. Eating disorders impact families and loved ones greatly. So make sure that you are getting the support that you need, okay? Question from Hita. What exactly are you supposed to eat in eating disorder recovery? So Hita, I hope I say your name right, Hita. If you have physical and mental hunger, then follow that without question. Even if that looks like chocolate for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, if that's what you're craving, eat it. Trust that your body knows what it needs. It will most likely need a shit ton of calories. I mean, I was eating around 7,000 to 10,000 calories a day, but don't count calories. As you progress in your recovery, you'll start to notice that you'll want other things such as potatoes, cheese, beans, vegetables, pizzas, burgers, salad, allow all of it. If you don't yet have physical or mental hunger, start with a minimum of 3 meals that each contain fats, carbs, and protein, and 3 snacks a day. Include at least one snack, at least, that is processed, such as a chocolate bar. This is to help supporting you going against the eating disorder rules. And just repeat that and reach out for support if you need it. Your second question, Hita, how long will you keep gaining weight? My answer, for as long as your body needs to. You have a set point weight, so you will not keep gaining weight forever. I know it feels like you will. I know it's the most petrifying thing in the entire world to gain weight. Trust me, I know personally. But you won't keep gaining weight forever. Your body will defend your set point weight both ways. So if you go over your set point weight in recovery, which tends to happen because it's a protective overshoot weight to protect you for future famines, your body, when it feels safe to do so and when it's getting enough, will naturally come back down to your set point weight. And if you lose weight below your set point weight, your body will do everything it can in its power to bring you back up to its set point weight. So your body will do what it needs to do. If you have lost your menstrual cycle, then getting that back consistently, regularly, every month is a good indicator that your body is on its way to optimal health and weight. It doesn't mean that just because you get your period back, if you did lose it, not everyone does, most people do, it doesn't mean that you're magically at the right weight for you. It just means that your body has enough energy to, and it feels safe enough to start a menstrual cycle again, but it will still have repair work it needs to do. So just keep eating unrestrictedly, because your job is to eat unrestrictedly for the rest of your life and build a relationship with your body and its needs. And then your body will be whatever size it will be. So I've linked two episodes in this blog, two episodes I did. One is titled, Will I Keep Gaining Weight Forever If I Live in Food Freedom? And the other one is titled, How to Find Your Set Point Weight. But what I will say is your job is to take care of yourself physically, mentally, emotionally, and eat unrestrictedly, and your body's going to be whatever it's going to be. Okay, Hita, your third question, and I'm answering all three because there wasn't much context to it with the answer. How can you make sure to completely recover and ensure this won't come back? Bloody great question. Number one, by healing the absolute root cause. Remember what I was all tongue-tied with, trying to get my words out about childhood trauma, abuse, codependency, shame, all of that. We need to go there, number one. Number two, by understanding and healing the reasons why the eating disorder is actually serving you. Again, that is linked to childhood trauma. Number three, by rewiring your fear of weight gain. Number four, by reparenting yourself throughout life and giving yourself and little you what you need from within, not from the outside world, not from something external. You get to give it to yourself. Again, this is all linked to kind of inner child work and trauma healing from childhood. Number five, choosing, because you have the will to do that and the power to do that. Choosing never to restrict as a coping mechanism again, and instead find self-caring ways to cope instead of self-harming ways such as restriction. Number six, self-love work. There's so much to this. It's, again, healing trauma, connecting to your worthiness, showing yourself you are a valuable person who deserves the best, setting boundaries, letting go of people-pleasing, mirror work for body image, intimacy work. There's a lot here. This is all what I teach in my coaching. But you absolutely can fully recover, fully, by rewiring your brain as well and your neuropathways. It's an actual thing. It's neuroplasticity. Those coaches that say your eating disorder thoughts will always be there, you just don't act on them anymore, I honestly call bullshit on that. I am a living example. I am the one living in my own head that none of my previous eating disorder thoughts are given to me automatically. Of course, I can go and access them in my brain and my memory bank and, oh, remember when I used to do this and this is how I was thinking and this is how I was felt. But then in the moment, they don't come up because I've healed the root. I'm not afraid of weight gain anymore. I've rewired my brain and I love and take care of myself. So the thoughts wouldn't make any sense. The brain wouldn't want to give me a thought that I never take action on anymore. So you can fully, fully recover. Okay, a question from Milia. Could you speak to food addiction? Is there really such a thing? Milia, this is such a great question. I'm actually going to dedicate a whole episode to this one, as there is so much I want to go into. And I'm going to record and release this episode the first week of November. So bear with me for a few weeks. But thank you so much for your question. And again, there's so much I want to speak to in this. I'm going to make it a complete episode. And one of the other reasons I'm doing that as well, not just for time now, but because honestly, when you Google food addiction, like there's no such thing as food addiction. The only bullshit that comes up is why you have a food addiction and why you're addicted to food. So I need to put something out there on the internet with my expertise behind it, showing you and explaining with evidence why you cannot be addicted to food. So great question, and bear with me with that one. I feel like my neck is hurting me today. Sorry, if you see me on the video, like kind of moving my neck in a weird way. I would love a massage. Okay, question from Dana. Hi, Dana. I would love to hear your thoughts on black or white thinking. What causes this? Why would I feel a pull to return to it, and how to break free from it forever? Right. The main reason is because it has served you well in the past. The first diet you went on was most likely successful. You would have stuck to the diet plan without wavering, weight loss would have happened, and you would have been very pleased with yourself. But here's what I'm guessing would have happened after that, because you would have, number one, dieted yourself to below your set point weight. Your body would have fought to bring your weight back up to where it wants to be. And number two, you would have been missing all the foods that you had given up, and you would have been craving them like there's no tomorrow. And then before you know it, boom, you find yourself knee deep in cookie dough or fill in the blank and binging your face off. You would gain the weight back again, and then you would start another diet. Only this time you would promise yourself that you would be even stricter to make up for it. The dedication and commitment, the all in, black or white, would have been worth the sacrifice at the time. You would have felt amazing, proud, and strong when you were on it. But when you had inevitably fallen off the wagon, you'd have felt like absolute shit. You would have been drowning in a shame spiral. I know that so well. This would have most likely continued for years. So tell me, Dana, how right, how close am I to what I've just described? And I know so many people can relate to. There's also a perfectionism and overachieving component to this, which will be linked to your childhood. You wouldn't have felt good enough. You wouldn't have felt loved and accepted just as you were. And so you need to be as close to perfect as possible in order to feel safe and worthy of receiving love. So other reasons why black or white thinking is adopted. Number one, simplification. Our brains often seek simplicity and categorization, making it easier to process information. This can lead to oversimplification of complex issues. So it helps stop overwhelm in a way. Number two, emotional reasoning. Strong emotions can make it challenging to see shades of grey. When you're upset or anxious, it's easier to think in absolutes. So imagine that you're in that shame spiral and you're feeling shit about yourself and you've just binged and you're like, right, in order to get away from this feeling as soon as possible, I need to be perfect on this diet to move away from this feeling of shame that I do not want to be in. Sound familiar? Number three, past experiences. If you've had negative experiences where middle ground solutions failed, you may be more inclined to resort back to black or white thinking. Number four, social and cultural influences. Societal and cultural norms can reinforce this type of thinking. For instance, media and social narratives sometimes promote polarized viewpoints. Insecurity, for example, just to speak to number four, let's talk about diet culture. You've got to be on it or off it. You've got to be dedicated. You can't mess around. You can't have cheat days. You've got to absolutely stick to the plan in order to get to the results. It's the whole black or white thing. And even when you have people come in like everything in moderation, well, what is moderation? Because if you are restricting and moderation feels like restriction, you're going to have an equal and opposite reaction to that restriction and end up binging. So I would say I now eat in quote moderation, apart from probably chocolate, because I still love it. I eat quite a lot of it, nowhere near as much as I ever did when I had eating disorders, when I was binging. But compared to the typical person, I don't know, maybe I eat way more than my husband, but he's not that keen on chocolate. So I eat in quote moderation without trying. There is no effort. So even moderation, if it feels restrictive, is not moderation naturally, if that makes sense. So number five, insecurity. Feeling uncertain or insecure can lead to wanting clear, unambiguous answers and conclusions. Again, a link to overwhelm in a way. So to break free from black or white thinking, number one, you probably are going to be seeing a theme here. Heal the root of your need to be perfect, your need to be an overachiever, your need to prove yourself. This is why you keep being pulled back to it. This is why you keep going back to black or white thinking. You need to get to the root of as to why it was even created for you in the first place. And again, it's linked to perfectionism. This includes self-love, inner child, and trauma work guided by a professional. A question for you, Dana. Why is it not safe to be in the middle ground, even though I want to be? Number two, awareness. Recognize when you're thinking in extremes. Mindfulness can help you become aware of your thought patterns. Mindfulness is great for everything, being in the present moment. If you're constantly thinking about your past and not feeling great about it, you're in a depressive state. If you're constantly future predicting and future tripping and worrying about the future and planning with worry, you're living in anxiety. Bring yourself into the present moment, into the now. That's where the peace truly lies. Okay, what did I have here? Number three, challenge your thoughts. So ask yourself if there could be a middle ground or a middle ground solution for alternative perspectives. Try to consider the nuances of a situation. Embrace uncertainty. Oh, now there it is. There's one of the root causes. Uncertainty, feeling unsafe in uncertainty, the need to control, the need to know, because as a child, you would have had an unstable upbringing. And so the pursuit of control would have made you feel safer. So understand that not everything has a clear cut answer. It's okay to be uncertain and to have mixed feelings. I'm going to add to this as well. There are only two absolute certainties in life. Number one, we're all going to die. We're going to leave our physical body and go into the spirit realm at some point. Number two, the only second certain thing in life is uncertainty. All right, number five, seek diverse perspectives. Engage in conversations with people who have different viewpoints. This can help you see the complexity of issues. So talk to people who don't have black or white thinking when it comes to food, and see what you can learn from them. And practice flexibility is number six. Train your mind. Well, it's more so train your brain, not train your mind, because you are mind, you are consciousness, and you have a brain. So train your brain to adapt to changing circumstances and consider multiple possibilities. Breaking free from this thinking style, it can take time and effort, but with healing the root cause and practicing self-awareness, you can learn to think more flexibly and make more aligned decisions in various aspects of your life. And of course, I know you're talking about eating here, Dana. So let me know if that's helped. Okay, the last question is by the lovely Tammy, who is a one-to-one client of mine. I would like you to talk about how healing the inner child and shifting focus to recovery actions looks like with practical scenarios in real life. Okay, I enjoyed writing this. I'm going to give you one example scenario. Scenario, you're in the supermarket and you want to buy a fear food to eat, obviously, to neutralize the fear of that food. You get to the chocolate section and you're automatically going into fight or flight mode. Your fear brain is screaming at you things such as, this food is a threat. You cannot eat that. You can only eat low calorie foods. This is not safe. Absolutely not. There's no fucking way we're going to eat that. What do you do? First of all, you're going to breathe. You're going to take a few deep breaths and you're going to remind yourself that right now I am safe. I'm just standing in the shop. I'm looking at chocolate bars. There are other people also buying chocolate bars and they haven't combusted into flames. It's okay. I am currently in this moment safe. And then check in with little you. How is she feeling and why? For example, she might be feeling scared. Okay, let's be honest, petrified. She's probably feeling petrified because calories might equal weight gain if you're currently under your set point weight, and weight gain isn't safe. It's not safe because when she gained weight as a teenager, she was bullied at school. She was judged by her family. She felt rejected and like there was something wrong with her. She was cut off from unconditional love, which is what children need to actually feel safe. What does little you need right now? Reassurance, comfort, a happy song, a dance. Be there for her energetically, emotionally. Say to her things such as, it's okay that you feel scared right now. I understand why. It is not fair that you experienced this as a child. I love you and I'm sorry that you went through that. It doesn't mean that history will repeat itself. And even if it does, I have got you now. I love you. And what's important is that we let go of this eating disorder that used to make us feel safe. It's damaging, it's dangerous, and it's keeping us stuck and scared. I am ready to love you and support you for who you naturally are. I won't suppress you anymore. You deserve to take up space in all the ways. Part of our journey to our authentic self-expression and self-love is to eat what scares us, to rewire our fear of weight gain. We can do it together. It starts with buying the chocolate, eating it, and then sharing our celebration with Victoria. I've got you. It's okay. Let's do this. That, my love, Tammy, is what it looks like in real life to go through what you've asked. Let me know if it's helped. And that's a wrap for today, Queen. So please share this episode with anyone who you think it might help. And stay tuned because, oh my God, I'm so excited for this. I'm going to be talking about it very soon. I'm releasing, I'm making something available as of the 1st of January, 2024. And I'm only accepting 10 women in this thing that I'm going to tell you more about later, because I'm capping it at 10 women. It's not a group thing, by the way, in case you're curious. It's something different that's going to be extremely transformational. And if you want to hear about that, then sign up for my email list if you're not already, because this is the order I'm going to share this to the world. Number one, my group coaching clients will find out about this first. And if they want to join and to take advantage of what I'm offering as I'm currently creating it, then they can. They have the first dibs to do so. The second people I'm going to share it with is my email list. And then the third people will be the podcast and social media. So if you want to know what the heck it is I'm talking about, you want to share my excitement, then make sure you're on my mailing list. That being said, thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Thank you for your questions. I love each and every one of you. And as you can see from the video, this beautiful plant is getting bigger and bigger. And it's like practically, literally on my head. He's called Zebra. You probably know that already. And I talk to him every day. Anyway, are you talking to yourself as beautifully, as lovingly, as kindly as I talk to my plants? If not, why not? All right. Mwah. Big loves. I'll see you next time. Bye. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share, subscribe, and leave me a 5-star review. Your support means the absolute world to me, and it really does help me to get my podcast out there for those that need it. Thank you.